Live from Burbank, California, the egg-rolling capital of the world, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now, he's a product of silent birthing, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim Merle. Thank you so much. How are the holidays? How is everybody out there? Sheeple. How are you, sheeple? Geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, people recovering from big bashes over the weekend, Easter egg hunts, feasts of all kinds. How is everybody? Are you feeling cleansed? All right, when is Lent? Is that over? Is that starting? Where are we at with that? Do you have any idea whatsoever, Jim?
I have no idea.
Doesn't Easter have something to do with Lent?
This whole week is a puzzle to me.
I got lost over the weekend. I pulled out a lot of books to do some studying. I wanted to learn more because a lot of people have issues about us talking about religion or if we do talk about religion, and I understand that. You know, on some level, a lot of people think it's our job to pander to the religious people in the audience so they feel comfortable when progressives take over the country that they won't be misrepresented or abandoned. So they don't want us talking about religion or alienating those people who may be duped by it. But let's get to that in a second. On the show today, we got filmmaker Robert Greenwald, of course, from the Walmart film Outfoxed, several guerrilla documentaries. This guy, I think, really has taken it to a level with documentary filmmaking and the accessibility and distribution of those documentary films. The way Robert does it really helps out. I didn't personally go to any parties where I had to sit through a Walmart movie or a Outfoxed or one of those events, but that's the new trend, is you put a little salon together, you have some people over for dinner, and educate yourselves and spread the word. I think Greenwald has sort of redefined the power of documentary filmmaking, I think, in the shadow of Michael Moore. But Michael Moore is a big movie maker, and Greenwald makes these films specifically to educate people, and we'll see what he's up to. I know he's in town to speak at a big event for the Democratic Party this Saturday. John Amato, a regular guest from the website Crooks and Liars, will be with us in a little while. David Roundtree from the band Blur is going to talk about his new project with us. It's called Empire Park. It's an animated strip show that's going to be on the MTV of England. I guess that's what Fuse is. I don't know if we even get it here, though I'm going to talk to him about it because I've been promoting and sort of trumpeting what I think South Park is doing as very good, despite the criticisms of some progressives. And I'll get back on that again. You know, I'll get back on that again, Jim, because why not push the envelope a little bit? Why not be provocative? The people who have been emailing us, my primary criticism is South Park takes crap, takes shots at liberals. Mm-hmm. And believe me, sometimes we need it. I know we'd take cracks. Why do I keep saying cracks? Pops.
Well, liberal
shots.
Crack.
Liberal crack. Liberal shots at liberals because they deserve it. They can be very tedious and annoying, hence progressive utopians with no sense of humor. And the bottom line is, I did a lot of my mentor program. I don't know if you know this about me, but...
Mentor program? What's that?
I came out to L.A. to do graduate work in drug use with Sam Kennison back in the late 80s. And Kennison... really, probably one of the most politically incorrect and bordering on, he was definitely misogynistic. He was definitely evil in certain degrees. But I got to be honest with you, funny bastard. Absolutely hilarious. And there were some things I didn't agree with him on. But I'm not going to take away the fact that he had guts and courage and was funny. And I think that South Park, whatever your criticisms may be, I do not think they're a right-wing show. If one of them is a libertarian or one of them says he hates liberals, does not mean he's a conservative per se. Some libertarians are okay in my book. I'm willing to give them a pass because some of them have a lot of funny and decent ideas about the way things should be. I think Bill Maher kind of leans towards the libertarian realm.
At times, yeah.
I'm not a complete fan of Maher, though I think stylistically he's a very effective comic, classic monologist, got a great writing staff, and puts some good stuff out there and challenges people. And I think anything that challenges people... that's meant to challenge people, especially the other people,
you think,
not people like us, them.
You think South Park is meant to challenge people, or is it just meant to get a laugh?
I think recently they've been very intentionally challenging people. I think that what got lost in the progressive conversation around the time the political correctness sort of took hold in this country, especially in college campuses, and some people say, that's a Republican talking point. It's not a Republican talking point. The First Amendment issue was removed from the progressive dialogue right when political correctness came out. And I think that some of that political correctness did operate as a censoring device for just about everybody. Everybody became very self-aware and self-conscious about what they were saying, and they had to double-check themselves to make sure they weren't offending people.
Now, political correctness, do you think that's... you see, it is my theory that is, like, mostly anecdotal now. If it ever existed to the extent that people say it did in the first place, and that is used mostly by conservatives or people who just...
No, I think there was a time where language had to be readjusted because certain things were determined to be offensive or at least leading to something offensive to particular groups, whether they be women, minorities, gays and lesbians, that there was an issue about how to speak in the workplace and how to speak on campus and in public venues that was, either bordering on offensive or outright offensive. So there became a way to check that in your own head. That how do we address someone appropriately? How do we not be misogynistic in the workplace? And I think a lot of that stuff that came out of that, certainly like black studies programs and gay and lesbian studies programs in colleges, I think that's great stuff. But I think in terms of what people can say and how they can say it and about who, that should be still a very free thing. Some hate speech, the idea of hate speech, I'm not completely on board with that. So I think that what Parker and Stone do is push the buttons a little bit. Because even regular people, it's not just right-wing people, they self-censor. And I think there has to be someone out there pushing the First Amendment envelope, especially around this Muhammad thing. I thought that was genius last week, to realize that a major network in this country would make a choice to limit somebody's speech or to limit their expression out of fear of reprisal from Muslim extremists in this country. I think that was important. I think in the same way that fighting the Patriot Act is important. That obviously is not about political correctness. That's about constitutional rights. But I think what Trey and Matt are doing, in some respects, is pushing the envelope to make people realize that even if it's self-censorship or corporate censorship, that's a repercussion of a certain type of fear culturally that does infringe on our rights of expression.
So you think the Muhammad thing was mostly a political correctness or out of fear? Because I remember running for the Daily Show, we couldn't do any jokes about Scientology for fear of...
reprisals from Scientology?
Well, yeah.
I think that there's
lawsuits.
I think there's a fine line. I think that if you're dealing with offending religious groups... I don't think it was about lawsuits. I think it was outright that Viacom, that Comedy Central, did not want to be taken to task or get bomb threats or threats from anybody because they put a cartoon image of Muhammad on.
Because those people really like to do the bomb. Oh, man, did I just say something?
Yeah, no. Yeah. See, that would be considered politically incorrect, or how about just outright racist, you freak?
What, it's racist to say that those people like to...
Generally, it's racist to say those
bombs.
Those people, just anytime those people is being used, you might want to check yourself on that one.
Okay, how about those peoples? The peoples?
Thems.
Their kind?
It's just
a
semantic stone's throw away from those brown people, or those people that speak in that gibberish.
Well, if you want to go that far, go ahead, man.
I'm not going that far.
Sure, it's your career.
Hey, look,
but, if you want to say that about them,
I'm just saying,
go ahead, but I'm not going to go join the...
Certain things make me uncomfortable. Certain things we're not supposed to say. There are certain lessons that are hard learned, like the N-word. I had to learn a hard lesson about the N-word. You can't even talk about that word. Like, I couldn't say that word right now.
It took me, I couldn't say the word nuggets for, okay, that's a cheap, I'm sorry.
No, but I literally did not know, and I had to be taken to task, that you can't even have a conversation about the N-word, certainly with a black person, and use the word, even as, a topic. Because it is that offensive, that loaded. And out of respect, and out of not wanting to come off as being racist or exclusionary, you don't do it. Okay? There's no law against it, but it's inappropriate to do that, and it is racist. But is there a law against it? No. Is what Matt Stone and Trey Parker doing around Muhammad? I think they're showing America, and unfortunately, a lot of it is lost. A lot of it is just self-promoting on some level, but a lot of it is lost on the American public of what they're trying to do. But I think First Amendment stuff, and another reason why the First Amendment has been taken out of the progressive dialogue, is because there was a strand of feminism that basically said that any representation of women, naked or otherwise, that almost everything culturally reflecting on sex was somehow misogynistic.
But that didn't last very long, though. That, you know, to me, these things are real anecdotal. Like, whenever you talk about Berkeley and San Francisco, I lived there for almost 18 years, and, you know, that is supposed to be the political correctness capital of the world. But, you know, growing up, but living there for so long, there was a lot of weird stuff going on there, and people weren't that politically correct. You know, well, in comedy, you could say any damn thing you want, and we're encouraged to.
I think you still can say anything you want. It's just a matter of people wondering whether it's right, whether it's wrong, how to respond to it. Things get taken out of context and misused, like in terms of something like Lenny Bruce used to do, that if you're an equal opportunity offender, is that okay, or is none of it okay? I think there's a sensitivity that is a repercussion of political correctness that still exist. I think what Matt and Trey were trying to do was that they were fighting corporate censorship out of fear of reprisals from terrorists, or fear of bad press, or fear of backlash from religious groups, that what they're dealing with is not even constitutional. They are fighting corporate powers to say, screw you, we can say whatever we want. That's the beauty of the rights that we have here. And I applaud that, as long as nobody's I think their intentions are real. We have to take a break. We have to talk to David Roundtree from Blur after that break about an animated show that I think is supposedly going to push some of the same buttons as South Park. We'll talk to him about it, so stay with us.
Now he's 82 years old and just got a jaywalking ticket. Mark Maron.
Oh, that's gay. You see, that's bad for me to say that.
Well, maybe.
That's really gay the way you said that.
Depends on how you use the word gay.
Does it depend on that?
I would think so. You know, it's so many subtle permutations of this whole thing.
Exactly. Why do they exist? Why do those permutations exist? Because, why are we aware of it?
Because some people can get really, really offended and be hurt by it and have been illegally discriminated against and treated because of that.
Right. So, but you're taking it on a personal level. But culturally, we've become very aware of that stuff in terms of, I think that if something is said with fear, like certainly you can't say things like, that's faggy. Okay? You can't say that. And I understand why you can't say that. I mean, it wasn't weird when we were in seventh grade. And certainly I have nothing, I would never use it now. But one of the words that I fight for the rights to use, as you know, it's a personal crusade, is the word retard. I love the word retard, and we all know that.
Very funny word.
It's a very funny word, and I mean no offense to retarded people or people who are mentally challenged. So you can't even say retarded, and I don't want to rehash this whole conversation.
Not like they know anyway.
Well, see, that's a misconception, because many of them do know. Many of them do.
I learned something already today.
Yeah. You might have hurt a mentally challenged person's feelings right now.
Did you watch The Sopranos last night?
I did watch it. Thank you for asking.
It was very amusing. The whole thing was amusing on one end and disturbing on the other. But that scene where he's being interviewed by his therapist or whatever, and she asks, "What are you talking about?" And he responds, "What do you think I'm talking about? He's gay." That was hilarious.
Well,
offensive too.
Well, I don't think that was offensive. I think the through line of this Sopranos episode and the whole Vito sub story, B story, is just beautiful, because you know you got Tony post death thinking about life, thinking about what is really important, what isn't important, and he's breaking ranks with the very deeply rooted prejudices of mob guys against homosexuals. And just
now you're offending mob people.
That's all right. Just seeing Vito wander around the New Hampshire town looking at antique shops, sitting by the waterfall, I almost cried. I mean, it was so.
But it was funny too.
It was pathetic and funny, and you're kind of sitting there going, why can't he just live and be gay if he wants to? Why can't Vito open up an antique store without worrying about getting whacked? You know, why can't he? All right, look, a lot happened in the world today, and we want to make sure you're up to speed and informed. So here's tonight's edition of the Mark Maron Show Short Order News. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration says alcoholism can now be treated by injection. After taking one shot of the new drug, heroin, recipients said they no longer had the slightest desire to have a Zima. Yeah. cheerleaders in Australia have been banned from bearing midriffs by officials of the sport who fear displays of skin may encourage eating disorders. Cheerleaders who are against the ban argue, quote, if people can't see our flat, perfect stomachs, how will they know we are better than they are? End quote. Interesting note, kids with eating disorders in Australia actually throw up counterclockwise. Didn't know if anyone put that out there because we're an information show. Signaling a big change in the White House, Bush's new chief of staff told top presidential aides that if they were thinking of leaving before the year's end, they should do so now. Bolton, the new chief of staff, said he won't know the exact number of staff members who want to leave until the White House handyman can pry them out of the Oval Office exit. Bush's aides were grateful for the offer until they were told they'd also need to swallow a cyanide tablet. See, that's kind of a bunker joke.
Bunker, Hitler bunker.
No, I enjoyed it. That's the short order news for tonight. I don't know. I've been having some weird thoughts lately around progressive ideas. I had a long conversation with my friend Pat. This guy, Pat Healy, he's an actor and comedian. He comes to my house every Sunday to watch The Sopranos. Become this regular thing. He's a friend of my wife's, whose birthday it is tomorrow. Thought I'd bring that up.
Mm, happy birthday.
And just in terms of what is known as alternative comedy and people are our peers and just the sort of weird, almost, it's not a sect. No, it can't be a sect, but it's definitely a niche market. And I've often noticed that in the alternative comedy world, in the world of geek comedy, in the world of hipster comedy, that it is almost exclusively white people, almost exclusively, you know, white men. There are some women, but it's just very interesting to me. I used to do this show in New York called Stella, and I always used to go up there and say that this is just, once again, voted this year's most non-racial nightclub event in New York City, mm-hmm. that there isn't a dialogue, and I don't know. I've had these conversations with my former co-host, Mark Riley, in terms of, like, I worked with Riley for a year and a half. We talk about race occasionally, and I don't know if that could be considered racist or exclusionary or what, but it just does seem that black people and white people, certainly in the circles that that I've been in my life, they just don't. It's not there. I'm not seeing
in
a
comedy?
Lot of integration. I see a lot of black comics, and there's a lot of black comics that changed my life. I mean, Richard Pryor to me is the greatest comic that ever lived, but I don't see it in that world, in the world of alternative comedy, hardly at all.
I think it's true for the same reason it's true of women, and we'll have more time to talk about that after this. Maybe.
Okay, we're going to talk to Dave Rountree in just a second, so stay with us.
An Italian and a kangaroo are stuck in a lifeboat together. Mark Maron.
See how long the list has to make so you don't offend anybody or any living thing? See how long the list gets to be, and then the humor of it is just completely ruined. It's just ruined.
Well, that's not the punchline, but, you know, it'll do.
I think sometimes being a little, not racist, but a little less politically incorrect makes more of a point. It relieves everybody. You can't walk around being afraid of offending everybody all the time. What a pain in the ass that is. I think a lot of us as liberals just defer to that. And the bottom line is that most people, they want to be taken to task a little bit, shook up a little bit, confronted a little bit. Sometimes it's very relieving to hear a little bit of inappropriate comedy. I'm right. A strong believer. I've done plenty in my life.
Give it to the kangaroos.
That's what I say. Damn kangaroos screwing up the world. If we weren't kangaroos, we'd all be much better off, my friend. The band Blur was huge. But it seems lately the members have been branching out into new projects, not all of them musical. Dave Rountree, the drummer from the band, has recently embarked on creating an animated show for Fuse. That's the British equivalent of MTV. The series Empire Square is a cartoon in the spirit of South Park. It's set to premiere tomorrow night, if I'm not mistaken. Is that true, Dave Rountree?
I say 65% of what you said there is true. It's a good average, I say.
Let's dig into that 35.
Okay, great.
It is supposed to premiere tomorrow night, right?
It is, but Fuse on an English channel. They're American.
So it's Fuse, and we can't, can we get that here?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a big cable station in 4 million homes or 50 million homes or a billion homes, God knows.
Oh, I got to check my satellite to see if I get it.
Yeah, no, you get it. If you get on TV, you get it, I'm sure.
Okay, man, that's good. Now, tell me honestly, is this a easier, better gig than rock and roll, making cartoons?
Well, the hours are about the same, you know.
Really?
You get very little sleep doing either, it has to be said. I mean, we're a small team, and it's kind of... There are a whole bunch of full-time jobs involved with making cartoons, and we have three or four of them each.
Is one member of the team the guy who brings the pot?
That was all a long time ago. I don't know what you're talking about.
So the animated series is called Empire Park and Empire
Again,
Square.
The 65%
Sorry,
mark.
There you go.
You're,
Empire Square.
Hitting the line, 65% every time.
Sorry, man. Empire Square. And I watched the first episode. It's funny. It's done in a kind of a weird, almost like what would you call it? What kind of style is that? It's almost like a video game style.
Yeah, it's called pixel art, you know, it's kind of slightly nostalgic, it looks similar to kind of video games.
Like Atari.
When I was growing up.
Like Atari video games, kind of.
Yeah, Commodore 64 and Spectrum and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I remember those. So now, the characters are kind of, they're you know, you got your computer geek, you've got the hipster girl, you got a couple of guys. And now, are you planning on taking on the big targets? What are your influences for this show, comedically?
Well, I suppose it's not really what you'd imagine. There's two questions there. The big targets, I don't know. This is the second series we've made of Empire Square. The first series went out on British TV, and it was a lot more issue-based and a lot more taking pot shots at people. And we found that when you try and stretch that out to a half hour, you know, making political satire or satire, it just gets a bit painful. So we concentrated more on telling funny stories, really, rather than taking a pot shots at people.
So the original series was shorter in length, you're saying?
Yeah, that's right. It was 3-minute episodes. Sorry, I'm talking all over you. I keep forgetting we're on radio. Yeah,
no, that's all right. 3-minute episodes. So, yeah, so you can pretty much do two jokes for the whole episode.
Basically, you get to say one thing well, really, in 3 minutes. Yeah, tell two or three jokes and say one thing.
Right, and I guess were most of the references you made on the shorter ones, were they regional? And are you trying to expand it so it has more of a worldwide appeal?
Well, we certainly had to change the reference points and change the background it was set against to make it a bit more relevant to American audiences. Yeah, that's true.
And so you're going to mix it up a little bit. I understand that. So who are some of your comedic influences? You did co-create the show. What did you grow up with that you found to be funny?
Well, my baseline for what's funny or not is Bugs Bunny. And I have to say, Bugs Bunny is one of my all-time favorite things to watch ever.
Yeah, Bugs Bunny was great.
Yeah.
Those were great cartoons.
Yeah, and they move well, you know. They look beautiful, they're funny. You know, and they tell crazy stories.
So you've set quite a bar for yourself.
Pardon?
You've set quite a bar for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we haven't quite got the production values of Warner Brothers, but I guess we're trying to tell kind of funny, cartoony horror stories here.
Now, in the characters that you chose, are they based on people you know?
There's a little bit of all of us in the characters, but... Richie, who's kind of the main character with most of the funny lines, he reflects the chief writer an awful lot. Matt Morgan is the guy that leads the writing team, and there's a lot of his personality in Richie.
Now, who decided to put the computer geek in a bunny suit? Now, I don't know where that conversation started and how it got to there.
To be honest, all of the characterizations came out of the initial concept sketches done by Russ Cole, the art director. He did these kind of three crazy characters, and they just immediately suggested something. You know, the guy in the bunny suit, he just looked like a nerd, you know, he just looked like a computer geek. Richie just looked stupid, and the Hooks just looked streetwise and sassy. So the characters kind of grew from the drawings rather than the other way around.
Okay, now I guess the other question is, when are you getting the band back together, man?
We've never quit, you know, we've been chipping away at a new album for some time, so I guess maybe it'll come out next year sometime. I mean, the trouble with being in a big band, you know, is that if you put a record out, it takes up 3 years of your life.
Yeah.
And we're all, you know, couple of us have got kids now. You know, Alex, the bass player, he's got twins on the way next
month. Don't they ruin everything?
Absolutely. But, I mean, how can you spend 3 years of your life away from new kids? I mean, it would be heartbreaking to do that. So we're all left without, but we want to take our time over it.
There's always the bring them on the road option.
Yeah. Well, for the rest of us in the band without kids, that option's out, I tell you.
That's it. The awkward moment where you show up with the two women on the bus and like, oh, damn. Sorry, girls.
Yeah, that was some time ago.
Yeah, that was another time.
Yeah.
Everybody's a grown-up now, I know.
Oh, definitely.
So now, in terms of playing rock and roll, you guys must be doing all right because everybody knows that damn song, the song number two. And we can't – now we're sitting in the studio, and we're trying to figure out what commercial is it on?
What commercial isn't it on?
Yeah, that's it. Okay. See,
I mean, it's advertised every kind of car imaginable. We did try and say, when the first car ad rang up and asked if they could use it, we tried to say yes if you send us a free car.
Right.
We'd have a garage full of cars by now if we'd have kept that up.
Well, I would think you could afford them by now. Are you got your name on the publishing of that tune?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. So you guys don't need to tour. You just got to make some cartoons and hang out with the kids.
If only that were true.
Now... Where you're in New York now?
Yeah.
And you live in there, or you just hanging out?
No, I'm just visiting Fuse. With the show debuts tomorrow night, 10:30. So it's the payoff really for us. It's the payoff for all that hard work.
And you a South Park fan?
Big South Park fan, yeah.
So that's it's pretty interesting how provocative they can be. Maybe you guys can start some trouble of your own and get that kind of publicity over there.
Yeah, you know, I think they're pretty angry people, aren't they? They have a lot of bones to pick with a lot of people.
I guess.
South Park is very funny.
Yeah.
But that they've done that now, you know.
Sure.
If all cartoons picked fights with worthy targets, then they'd just be aping South Park. We're kind of blazing our own trail, really.
Well, that's cool.
Little horror film.
How you feeling about how are people feeling about Americans in Britain these days? How's that faring? How you feeling about your own prime minister these days?
Personally, I'm a Labour Party member. I'm a Blairite.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, really, to be honest, the England is split down the middle now between those who approve of the war and approve of what America has done and what Britain and other the Allies have done, and those who don't. Both have a case. You know, you have to say.
Yeah.
Neither of them have arguments that could be easily dismissed, I think.
See, now I'm thinking like, I'm talking to you now, I'm thinking like, okay, let's try and picture the Empire Square episode where they have that conversation. And you're right, it probably wouldn't hold up for a half hour. So great luck with the show there, Dave. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, pleasure. Good luck with the show.
Thank you very much. That was Dave Rowntree from the band Blur, the series Empire Square. It's a cartoon that can be seen on Fuse, which I assume I get. I have no idea.
I've never heard. I don't know anything about Fuse.
Dude, I don't know where the hell people get time to do all this crap. Not him, but, I mean, I don't even know what's on my satellite TV. There's a list of stations. What I have to do just to get to... I'm a moron. I am the equivalent of the guy that never sets the clock on the VCR because I don't figure out how to program my favorite stations.
I can't set the alarm on my clock.
Sweepy Bill Kolar, our new producer, he had me spend like $9 million on new equipment in my garage that only he can know how to use. So he thinks I'm stupid. I don't get that. It's like, can't fire me, can you? Guess what? How are you going to operate that equipment in your garage? How are we going to make recordings? If worst comes to worst, if this entire city burnt down, I could do a show from my garage if Bill Kolar was there. Do you see how that works? Is that, you know, what's next is like I'm waiting for the day that Kolar comes up to me and says, I'm thinking maybe we should put a bunker under the garage just for the sound equipment and maybe with some water.
Underneath the one you already have?
You're the one with the bunker. You grew up in a bunker.
Yeah, I grew up in, no, we had a bomb shelter.
Oh, I'm sorry.
There's a big difference between a bunker and a bomb shelter.
All right, let me clarify.
Bunker you can survive in. Bomb shelter you just drown in when it floods.
Is it still there?
Yeah, I think it's still underneath
the
driveway.
Me and Kolar, we're gonna move the equipment over to your bunker or your bomb shelter, and we're going to do the show from there if necessary.
Earl Bunker?
We'll bring Andy because he's going to need to go. Andy and his our board op and his significant other. Only a few people can come down.
I tell
and
you, then, the last final days in the bunker were pretty bad.
And then, Jim, you can finally execute your dream of being a cult leader. Huh?
Cult leader.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Me and Gypsy and Krista P.
Oh,
we'll lead an army of God knows
you
what.
You better stock that pantry, buddy. If you're going to have Gypsy down there, you better have plenty of things to cook. Look, we're talking about the blog, markmaron.com, if you want to say hi to everybody over there. We should probably talk about something important like gas prices or the new Neil Young record or, you know, a couple of Louisiana papers were given the Pulitzer. Rumsfeld says that this is just a matter of time before everything settles into what he thinks it should be. All right, we'll try to get to that. Stay with us.
I got my head checked by a jumbo jet. It wasn't easy, but nothing it is. No.
And now your number one source for everything, Natalie Holloway, Mark Maron.
I don't even know what's going on with that. You know, I just don't. I don't know.
You're
what
obsessed
that,
with that.
I'm not.
You're
I don't
obsessed.
Know what. Where do people get the time? Where do they get the time to be obsessed with this crap? To be obsessed with American Idol? You know, I'm not saying the Holloway case is crap. I feel bad for the woman. But how the hell can you talk about it ad infinitum?
Man, you can criticize the Holloway thing, but don't criticize American Idol watchers.
Look, I think that, you know, the only thing that would make American Idol interesting to me is if when somebody lost, they'd shoot them on the stage.
I like that.
Well, that's the next step. They should be punished for their lack of talent.
And if they win, they should hang themselves.
That'd be hilarious. I had an idea for a show that never took off. It was called Popped. Did I ever tell you about that pitch for a reality show?
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's all shot through the scope of a rifle. And you just basically hear the guy who's with the rifle, he's with a friend, and it's just like random. Like, they're in a building, and they just find someone walking down the street, and they're like, watch this. And they just take the guy, lob a piece of his brain off, and then giggle and run off. And that's the whole show. I don't know how anyone wins.
And Ashton Kutcher says, you've been popped.
You've been popped.
Dude.
Yeah. Obviously, this is not a real show that I pitched, but certainly if I had the time... If I figured out how to manage my time properly, I could do a clever short film revolving around that idea. Now someone will just steal it and do it. People have stolen my stuff.
But that your idea is ideas. Copywritten. It's copywritten.
So yes. Yeah. I think if we say that it's copywritten, it's copywritten.
So if you see it anywhere, you can sue.
I think we finally got our foreign correspondent on the phone. As many of you have heard, there have been riots in Nepal for the past several weeks. And now with more on this story is our foreign correspondent, Angus McFarker, who's in Nepal on assignment. What's the latest, Angus?
Well, I'm in Kathmandu, and I'm in jail. They gave me one phone call, so I thought, I'll ring up Mark and file a report.
Oh, my God.
I take great pride in my work, Mark.
Oh, my God. My God, Angus, what happened? I'm glad you filed the report, but what happened?
Well, me and the lads here have been rioting against King Gayanendra. He's an autocrat, you know. Bloody dictator. A first-class butt biscuit, Mark. These Nepalese geezers are trying to get a bit of democracy around here. But King Numbnuts and his Nancy cops chucked all of us protesters in the clink, which, if I may say, smells a bit like sweaty armpits and rancid yak butter. Not something you want served on a plate for tea, I promise you.
Wow.
Unsavory.
Wow, wow, you must have had a rough week.
Well, if by rough you mean absolutely brilliant, then yes, I have, Mark. Oh, I've been beaten like Joan Crawford's daughter all week. My kidneys are purple and veiny like a pimento loaf. My pee is the color of lobster bisque. I never felt so alive. Top of the world, Ma.
Oh, I've been reading about the situation there, Angus, and I understand that the king has offered to hold elections by April next year.
That is total bollocks. King Gayanendra is a lying panty sniffer, a power mad son of royal scum.
Well, wait, so that means he's like the George W. Bush of Nepal?
Oh, nicely played, Mark. Yeah, he's a monarch, and nobody likes a monarchy. Queen Elizabeth, wanker. Queen Victoria, wanker. Lady Di, wanker. And so on and so forth. We Scots have never been fond of the crown. Did you see Braveheart? Well, son, that'll give you a general idea of our sentiments on that topic. Every man dies, but not every man truly lives. Oh, makes me weep like a baby every time.
All right, so Angus, the fighting has been fierce then, yes?
Oh, yeah, extremely fierce, given that the Nepalese are a bunch of Hindus and Buddhists, yeah? What is the sound of one hand kicking your ass, eh? Maximum violence!
So how'd you get arrested, Angus?
Okay, one day, the local kids are running around the streets, and they're chanting, "Guyan under a thief! Leave the country!" Like that, right? Throwing rocks at the cops and what have you. Then, a few of them start stacking these tires up, right? Tires?
Yeah.
And they're just standing around.
Oh, no, I see what's coming.
There.
I see what's coming.
So I say, "Oi, Nancy, are you going to burn that stack of tires? Or are you going to stick your toter in it?" Next thing I know, whoosh, fire, smoke, go! It was gorgeous, Mark. But, of course, my lungs filled up with a noxious residue and I passed out.
All right, and then that's when the cops got you.
Oh, aye. I got a huge lump on my head. I woke up in the pokey here with my man sack aching and filling up with pus. Oh, you can't beat democracy, really.
All right,
the
Angus. When do you think you'll be released, buddy?
Well, I don't know, but, you know, if all of us protesters push on these bars, I think we can just push ourselves right on out. Come on, lads. Put your backs in it! Oi, 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 oi! Go!
Angus. Hey, hello? All right, well, that was our foreign correspondent, Angus McFarker, reporting from Kathmandu. Once again, making news. That's what Angus does. He makes news. He doesn't report on the news. You know, I just had an interesting thought in relation to our talk about race, political correctness. Is that I don't ever judge people in a negative way because of their race or their sexual preference or anything like that. And this whole idea of inclusiveness and tolerance is, I just realized something about myself, Jim, is that more so than not, I am more concerned with them accepting me than I am with me accepting them. You know, because I generally just, I am usually a curious person. Like, even when it comes down to the immigration issue, my thoughts, I grew up in New Mexico. I grew up around Latinos and Chicanos and whoever, however they want to be called or I'm supposed to call them. And I find the more different types of people there are in any given city, the more interesting and diverse the feeling of the city is. And there's part of me that's sort of like, let everybody in. There's really part of me that just thinks that naively without thinking of economic repercussions or anything like that. I think that the more different types of people they are, the more different desires and pursuits that people have, as long as they're not hurting other people, the more interesting the party is. Yeah. I believe that.
What a butt biscuit.
Who?
You.
Why would you say something like that?
I don't know. You know, Angus said it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's nice, Jim. Here I'm trying to open my heart to you, and you just slam it down. And that brings me to an email. Yeah, people are worried about us, Jim. Stay with us.
Live from Burbank, California, home of Piltdown Man, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now, he's got a bio lab in his trailer. Mark Maron.
Did you use that one already?
No.
All right. Look,
You know how hard it is to keep track of these things? I got a million of them.
I know, and you're an environmentalist, so recycling is good, apparently.
Yes.
Yeah, apparently it's good.
Extremely good.
So continuing our conversation about comedy, which we will in a second, in just a few minutes, I'm going to have Robert Greenwald on the phone, the documentary filmmaker, whose movies like Walmart, The High Cost of Low Price, and Outfox, Rupert Murdoch's War on Journalism, has educated and elevated the cultural dialogue in terms of activism, my friend. But I think there's an interesting topic we've got on about the exclusivity in certain communities of comedy. Because I think it was like that originally. And when I talk about alternative comics being at least, it's not segregated, but they're just different worlds. And there's very few comics that talk to everyone. And the ones that usually do, it's still not everyone. And I think that what's happened now, because you made a comment to me over the break, that it seems like there are less black comics or less female comics in the worlds we run in. But the truth of the matter is there's more of both than there ever was. And I think that there are separate markets, that the whole idea of niche marketing and focusing on playing to your demographic has really created separate communities in terms of comedians performing. There are black comics working the black circuit who are making a very good living, and I don't know who they are.
Yeah.
And a lot of them don't know who I am. And that's the way it goes. I don't know how big. I know there's now an Islamic comic. There's a guys who tour. There's like four or five Muslim comics who sort of work that angle. It is a matter of working the angles. And in terms of crossover, that was what was so amazing about people in the 60s, some of them, where the culture was more redeveloping, realigning itself. Both black culture and white culture and just the culture in general was sort of separating from the Eisenhower times. And there was a sort of hipness to a lot of the new comedy and what ultimately became stand-up. But it's always been blacks and Jews at the heart of it all. And your people, wherever the hell they're from.
Greek sort comics, Sparky Youkarkas.
Oh, he was a genius. A lot of people don't even appreciate just the impact that Sparky Youkarkas had on many of us.
Parka.
Yeah, Sparka Parka.
Parka Youkarkas. Well, you were talking about ethnic comics catering to their own ethnicities.
Yeah.
But I think, back then in vaudeville, they played for a wide range. They played for the Midwest. They played for all America.
Yeah, but back in vaudeville.
With a real ethnic.
Back in vaudeville, black acts were really sort of limited to Harlem, and Jerry Lewis would go up and steal their act and then bring it back down and make it what it was for everybody. The thing is that was, there may have been a Midwest thing, but vaudeville was still pretty Jewish in terms of some of the stand-ups. Will Rogers was not a Jew, obviously. I mean, think about, like, if you were to really...
I think he was.
Really?
I think he was.
I may be wrong, but I think
Will
Rogers?
He was. I think he was, yeah.
That's why they took him out. Yeah.
That's why they took him out.
Got too popular. That's why they shot his plane down.
Luftwaffe shot his plane down?
Maybe I'm thinking of Otis Redding. Man, there's so many conspiracy theories running around my brain. We got things to do. We got to talk. Is he on the phone here? He's not yet? Well, let's give it a second, because people are a little worried about us, Jim. By the way, I want to thank everyone for coming to my house on Sunday. The huge party that we had. It was Sweepy Bill Kohler's wife, Janice. You came without your significant other because she was not feeling a little under the weather.
Yeah.
Bill's son, Zach, came, and I made falafel and banana bread, and it was a regular hippie outing out there in the backyard for Easter. And then we
very
had
delicious,
And then we had a hippie jam, man. And then we had a hippie jam.
Then we looked to search for eggs.
Did you?
I did.
That's weird. No one hit any. Did you find any?
I went through all of Mishnah's belongings. Didn't find one egg in there.
Really? Because I was going to say, if you found any, there was probably some very upset bird somewhere saying, "Who stole my baby? Who stole my baby?" Here, listen. That joke. I mean, I knew when it was coming out of my mouth that it was
not. I'm not going to say anything about it. Sure, you criticize my jokes, but I'm not going to criticize yours. You know what?
I'm
not prejudiced.
I was just talking. And if you had a niche market, Jim, what would that look like?
It would be humanity.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well,
end curtain.
We're going to play the tapes of that show we did together, and we'll see.
The tapes? Nixon takes or something?
Oh, boy. Robert Greenwald and his company Brave New Films almost single-handedly, I'm going to say that, we'll see what he says, started an effective progressive guerrilla documentary filmmaking movement with films like Outfoxed, Rupert Murdoch's War on Journalism, Walmart, The High Cost of Low Price. Greenwald has made films that become available to the public quickly and motivate political action. Because of the Walmart film, grassroots activism has stopped Walmart from ruining many American small towns and small cities. He will be the keynote speaker this weekend at Democratic Candidates Forum here in L.A. Welcome to the show, Robert. It's nice to talk to you again.
Same here. Very good to be back with you, Mark.
So now tell me about this event you're doing on Saturday. Can you tell me what that is?
Well, I was invited, and so I said yes. It's a forum where they're going to have a series of different candidates, all of whom running for state office in California, some debating each other, and they just asked me to talk in general. Now, I'm not particularly committed to any one candidate or any one party, but I thought it was a great opportunity to let everyone know, particularly some of the candidates and their advisors and the grassroots folks, how film can be used as a tool to activate and energize around the issues, which is really where my focus is.
I think that you've done a great job with it because of the accessibility, the availability of your films, and that it seems to be part of the mission that you and your company have taken upon yourselves is really to educate.
Yes, well, hopefully, make it interesting, make it entertaining, people will learn, and most importantly of all, Mark, is do something. As I say, if anybody sees any one of the films and says, oh, it was good or it was bad, but doesn't do something, we've failed. Where we succeed is when they write a letter, make a phone call, get out, volunteer, any kind of step towards social change, because I really see these films as married to the folks and the groups and the organizations that are doing the hard, heavy, long-term lifting around the issues.
So are you not telling me that some people have actually written reviews of your film saying, I didn't really buy Walmart as the villain? Come on.
Well, you know what the shocking thing with the Walmart film was? We actually got a tremendous number of really good reviews, and I never expect good reviews just because I'm neurotic and it's my nature. You know. But in that case, across the country, from the New York Times to the L.A. Times, we were shockingly well-received in the critical press.
You know, it's amazing that I, too, am neurotic and obsessive and strange, but you seem to actually get things done with yours. How did you train your neurosis to work for you? Please, tell me.
Well, there are worse things than being a workaholic, right? You can have other addictions.
I have all those. See, I picked the wrong one. That was it.
With so many bad guys out there and so many issues and... Seriously, what I've discovered these last couple of years with the documentaries, it's totally reaffirmed and reawakened my not only love of film, but the enormous respect I have in the way that film, and I'm a reader, but we got 800,000 people in 1 week to look at the Walmart film. We couldn't have done that with a book, with an article, with a magazine piece. It's just not the same.
No, it isn't. And I think also the amazing thing, and part of what you're saying, is that when something is taken in by a group, just the reaction becomes a group reaction in that moment.
Exactly. So, having a group of people together watching the film, one plus one creates much more than two.
Now, tell me a little bit about some of the positive repercussions of the repercussion. Is that a positive word? Not really. So, some of the things that happened because of the Walmart film, because I know that there was a tremendous amount of success with townships stopping construction, making them be more responsible, and that continues. Yes,
absolutely. And again, I just want to be clear that it's not the film by itself. Because it's the film with the groups, it's the film with people like your listeners who buy the film, get a copy, and then go out there and get people to watch it. And from that comes the change. But we had some amazing experiences a week after the film came out. We got a letter from, I think it was Northern California, where a vote had been overturned, where they gave copies of the films to all the city council folks who had to make a decision. Then about a month or 2 months later, there was the great victory in Maryland, where, again, working with Wake Up Walmart and Walmart Watch and SEIU and these groups all over the country, they kicked butt there and forced the Maryland legislature to pass a law where essentially large corporations would pay something for health care. Now, that's a pretty minimal baseline, but it's the first time it happened, and now there have been laws introduced all over the country. I was in Europe for a week, and we got a phenomenal response in the United Kingdom and Berlin and just all over the place. So it's been very, very gratifying, and it's going to be ongoing. We're not going to defeat Walmart and its what it represents, which is the multinational corporations, in 1 minute. It's a long-term battle, but I really hope and believe the film is going to be a useful tool.
Well, you know, how is the I really wish that there would have been as equal a grassroots campaign against Fox and Rupert Murdoch. Well, how can we take him down?
Well, it's definitely a challenge. I mean, because Fox News loves having us attack them, but I hope that what the Fox did is it begins to raise the issue not just of Fox News, but of media consolidation and ways that we can be effective in protecting what is ours and getting our voices heard on the other media. I think Fox, in some ways, is a hopeless case, and I used it as an example. It's a poster child, if you will, of the worst behavior that can happen when you have media consolidation.
I think we got to buy you a satellite, Robert. the Robert Greenwald Network. Now, you got some other stuff you're doing. You want to hang on and talk a little bit more after the break? All right, we're talking to Robert Greenwald. We will continue talking to him in just a minute. So I think you should hang out for that, and perhaps Jim and I will fight.
And now he's standing the pot of vodka.
Yeah, I'm going to leave that. Wait, why don't you do it? What do you got?
I got, okay.
Try it again.
And now he's standing... And now he's standing behind his defense secretary. It was worth waiting for.
I think it was. I'm just happy you didn't just go gerbly and try to make me think that you just screwed it up, and that's your plan now, is just to do that every show.
Snoobly snobbly snoobly snob.
And thank you very much. I appreciate that. It's very nice of you to say about me, Jim. I'm going to talk to Robert now, and you can feel free to ask a question if you like. And I, you know,
well, you already passed the Walmart question subject a little bit. But.
Well, Robert Greenwald is on the phone with us. I was going to ask him about what he's working on currently, but Jim, if you'd like to add to the, and I'm not infantilizing you at all. I'm just trying to integrate you into the conversation because I don't like it when you're over there kind of sulking. What do you want to ask Robert something? Go ahead.
That's sulking. I just had a question.
Let's not fight in front of Robert, please.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
Robert.
Yes, Jim.
How pervasive is Walmart in Europe right now? Like in places like Holland, I would think a country like Holland would be really really up in arms against what Walmart is doing.
Well, it's actually very interesting. It's very different country by country. Germany, for example, Walmart bought a chain there, and they're forced to deal with the unions, which is very interesting because here, of course, they would, you know, burn their mother rather than deal with the unions. But in Germany, they deal with them. There are strong unions, and they forced them in line. In the United Kingdom, there are unions, and they bought a chain called Asda, and they just backed off from a confrontation with the unions where I happen to know it because they contacted me about using the film, and they were going to screen it at the union rallies throughout England. So it is radically different in each country. Depends on how large an entity they've bought. Most of the countries, what they're doing is they're buying existing chains and then going in and imposing the Walmart culture. But there's a much greater awareness around the world about the toll of these large corporations, and also there's much stronger labor movement in most other countries that is an integral part of fighting them off and not letting them destroy jobs and communities.
And they took a hit in the bottom line this last year. I mean, I think they only made $1 million as opposed to $1 million.
Well, where they've taken the hit was really in their stock prices, which is, you know, interesting because if you accept their frame, oh, we have to do this to make more money, they are doing substantively worse in the stock price than, you know, some of the other places that treat their employees a whole lot better. And it begins to be an argument of why they will change and have to change over time as people organize. But again, I think the key factor and the exciting thing is we've seen so many different entities get together, from the student movements to the women to the religious community to labor to family businesses joining together. They've been very successful in different cities and towns and states fighting them. It's not easy, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, they're tough. They got a lot of money. They're mean as they come. But they can be stopped.
All right, well, this is interesting. Let's talk about, I was going to ask you, because I know you're doing this Democratic Candidates Forum, you're going to be the keynote speaker, and I know that immigration is going to come up. And speaking about grassroots movements and just people rising and challenging what they see as rights being trampled on, that must be fairly inspiring to you on some level.
Oh, it was amazing. I was out of the city when I was traveling with the film when they had the huge 500,000 rally here. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it just brought tears to my eyes when I saw and read some of the coverage of it, because it was a totally, as you said, it was an outpouring of people who cared, of people who refused to be silent anymore, and was another indication of what I believe, which is why I think I'm, you know, my job, and I believe in it passionately, is to work on the issues. And when we get strong on the issues, the candidates will follow.
Yeah.
Rather than, as many of my friends are always in search of the perfect candidate, you know, who's going to come in on a white horse and save us, it ain't going to happen.
Nope.
But if we beat the hell out of them on issues that we care about, then we will get candidates who will carry them forward. And by the way, interestingly, the film that we're releasing now, which is about Tom DeLay, called The Big Buy, and about his band of crooks, where you can get it at TomDeLayMovie.com. You could also get the Walmart film at the Walmart website.
TomDelayMovie.com. Now, is that your film or you're releasing it?
We're releasing it.
I talked to those filmmakers.
Yeah, aren't they terrific?
Yeah, it's a great thing, and now they've got an ending for their movie almost.
Wasn't it nice of him? He resigned just in time to give us an ending. And also, this way, we can add all the other crooks to the film.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to use it throughout the country as a way of letting everyone know Tommy Boy is gone, but his band of merry followers is still out there.
Right. The culture of corruption persists. And I like the idea that you just put in my head about how if the people get together enough, they can actually pressure their representatives to do what they want before the corporations, you know, turn them out and prostitute them.
It's exactly the case.
Yep.
I mean, think about it even historically. This is what opened my eyes. Whether it was the civil rights movement or the women's movement or the labor movement or the peace movement, it was never led by political candidates.
Yeah, we got to always remember that. I appreciate it, Robert. I really appreciate the work you're doing, and thanks for talking to me on my show.
My pleasure. Be well.
Okay, you too, Robert Greenwald. All right, well, I love talking to Robert Greenwald, by the way.
Interesting guy.
He is an interesting guy. And it was good that... that you spoke up to, and we're going to address our problem without bringing a counselor in here because some people are worried. So stay with us.
And now he's an expert on 7th century BC Proto-Corinthian red figure pottery. Mark Maron.
Man, you're giving away all my secrets. So you did a little research, Jim Earle, on Will Rogers?
I you know, so far I haven't been able to find out conclusively. I think he's part American Indian and half something else, but I thought he was part Jewish.
He was a huge stand-up in his day. They didn't call it that then.
No.
I don't even know what they called it. He was a comic personality.
A talker.
I think they used to call it National Treasure. He was a national treasure.
And someday... they will
song and dance man.
You
probably would have called him a hack. Probably would have called him a boat act. Probably would have called him a
boat act? What's a boat act?
You don't know what a boat act is?
No, I don't. Tell me.
You don't know what a boat act is?
No.
Oh, man.
How long are we going to go on with this range of questioning? No, I don't know what a boat act is.
It's a boat act.
It's a boat act. Okay,
you know
we established
act?
That. I don't know what a boat act is.
Well, there was
is.
A time in the 80s where there was a schism in comedy. You had the guys who thought that they were real comics, that were doing the real deal, the outlaws on the edge, touring night to night in the comedy clubs, laying it down, purveying the truth. Then you had guys that did song parodies and juggled, okay?
Oh, the boat.
The boat acts.
You mean...
the guys who could go on the cruise ships and not offend anybody.
Okay.
A boat act.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, back in the day, man, I used to hang out with a guy named Frankie Bastille who did a Death to Jugglers tour. He's now deceased and was not the greatest person himself, but he was quite a character. There were a lot of back in the old days in the early in the mid 80s of comedy, there were a lot of guys that were actually in it just to stay one step ahead of from the tax guy and to avoid prison. But look, I wanted to bring this up before we get any farther. We're getting some mail because of our altercation around Zeppelin.
The feud.
Yeah, Mark, I know the subject line is probably true, which is I guess they can't all be gems. That was the subject line. Man, you and Jim getting a bit testy on the air with each other, especially this past Friday night. Does familiarity breed contempt? It would be sad if the two of you were to part ways. Both you and Jim are wonderfully talented. Mark, obviously, you are much more talented than Jim. And I think,
wait.
No, it doesn't say that. But it says both you and Jim are wonderfully talented. Please show each other the mutual respect you both so rightly deserve. That goes for Jim as well. Don't self-destruct on us. Unless that's what you moved out to L.A. to do, then just tell us all to bugger off. Thanks for the guilt button at the end. Unless that's what you went out to L.A. to do, shoot your own feet off in front of everybody.
Wait, we've been doing this to each other since the very first day I was on the air with you, practically.
Here's where it gets cute, though. All right? P.S., for the record, I would have to agree with Jim that Zepp were not as influential. But then again, Lennon hated the Beatles and all that they stood for after Epi died. All right, so you see what he's doing? He's playing us, Jim. All right, now, Mike, listen, Mike, if you're going to take Jim's side on that, maybe we should get you on the phone, and I'll give you a piece of my mind about Zeppelin. I'll defend Zeppelin, but he sort of got on board with both of us here.
Yeah, well, you know what? You also agreed with that, too. The Beatles are much more influential than the Zeppelin ever were. You agree with that.
Yes,
I mean, he was saying...
I was saying was that you were a closed-minded musical fascist who thinks that everybody should be goose-stepping in Beatles boots and mop tops. you know, to maybe
goose-stepping.
What song would your Beatles army be marching to? Which one?
All You Need Is Love, Mark.
Oh, yeah,
I think I think we've forgotten in the studio today.
All You
today.
Need Is Love.
I think we've forgotten that.
Uber Alles.
How many times can you listen to that high-pitched squeal?
You know what I like? You know what I like more than anything else? Ba, 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 ba. Ba,
what
ba,
is it?
Ba,
the Parker's ba, Family?
No, it's from a Magical Mystery Tour. Da, 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 da.
It's a good song.
What is it called? Flying?
Flying. Blue Jay.
After Blue Jay. Enough of this. You know, the people are relying on us to change the world. Yeah. I can't sit here and do this with you today.
You can't change the world.
I got John Amato on the phone.
Everybody's listening to Led Zeppelin.
I can't do this. People have got to get their rocks off, Jim.
Well, then listen to the Stones. Or Tommy Rowe. Man, Sweet Pea has a drum solo in it.
Listen, the website crooksandliars.com is a clearinghouse of video news clips that call the right out on everything. Thank God it exists because I don't have the time or know-how to watch all the political relevant clips that come out over the week. Media gnome and web posting wizard John Amato filters through all the crap that pours out of the tube and grabs the gems and posts them. He's here with us again. Thanks again for coming there, John Amato.
Hey, Mr. Mark, it's great to be here.
Dude, I was on the site, and I tell you, that what is she? New York Post succubus Michelle Malkin is a horrendous criminal against humanity. What a heartless... I can't even say it, but I would.
No, I hear you. You know, she can sort of just cause that reaction in normal people. She does things. She incites rage, hostility, violence, absolute fear, and then just prints people's phone numbers.
Now, let's talk about that, because my listeners don't know what you're talking about. On Crooks and Liars, you've got this exchange that she had. This was in reaction to a protest against military recruiting down at UC. Was it UC Santa Cruz?
Yeah, down at UC Santa Cruz. So there's a group, SAR, of Students Against War, who, you know, the recruiters were coming on campus, and they staged a protest.
Uh-huh.
And so, of course, you know, led by the Bill O'Reillys and Sean Hannis, this is just unacceptable American behavior. And she obviously wrote a post, called them moon bats, started lying about them. And unfortunately for them, they're students, so they sent out a little press release, but it was just for the press, and they had some phone numbers on it. And so what does Malkin do? She prints their phone number. Now, these are students. You know, these aren't our elected politicians. These are students. So she prints their phone numbers, and now they're getting death threats upon death threats.
Yeah, just freaks that follow the right-wing agenda who have nothing better to do but scare the hell out of kids who are trying to stand up for something that most of this country believes.
Right. I mean, look, whatever your stance is on that particular issue about recruiters going onto campuses, you know, that's fine. Whatever, you know, you can debate about that. But you just can't, you know, these guys have beliefs. You just can't try to intimidate people out of doing things. And college campuses are full of ideas. You do these kind of things.
Well, that's right. But, you know, right now you got idiots like David Horowitz and his minions trying to, you know, shut down any sort of political dissent or debate on campus and trying to characterize all college campuses as just being bastions of communist rhetoric.
Oh, yeah. It's really, you know, ridiculous. And this guy, especially Horowitz. But, you know, and so there is a big push. I mean, you had that kid tape recording high school teachers. It's kind of like they're all going to be going in with recorders now.
What kind of kids do this? What kind of rat bastards are these kids whose parents tell them that that's the thing to do is rat out their teacher for putting some ideas in their head that might be against the mainstream thought?
I mean, and with that one case, you know, the kid didn't bring it to the teacher. He didn't bring it to the school. He went right to a conservative radio talk show, so he can get on TV and be famous.
And then, you know, you listen to that stuff. I can't remember the guy's name offhand, but it just pisses me off to no end, because if it weren't for people like that teacher who said they were his own opinions to the class, if it weren't for people like that in my life, I wouldn't have known how to think.
No, I mean, you know, this is what school's for. You know, there were many teachers that said things that I didn't agree with, and it wasn't like, oh, my God, they're brainwashing me. I just said I didn't agree with them, and you can have a discussion. But for them, you know, they don't want you to have a discussion.
I know. That, it was weird for me, John, because whenever I disagree with a teacher, it's usually over algebra or chemistry, because I just didn't have the patience to learn how to do it. So I'm like, those numbers can't make metal. But
So what happened, I've been contacted by a lot of students down there at Santa Cruz that are saying that then she refused, what she did, then she did an update on her post saying, oh, I'm not condoning death threats, right? So obviously she knows that death threats are coming and her site's causing it, and she won't do anything about it.
She says she's not condoning it, but she didn't take the numbers off.
Exactly. So now they're still getting death threats, and then she does another post today trying to say, you know, with some article that doesn't have any proof, but she's trying to say now the students are, like, vandalizing and they're criminals. And then she puts their numbers back up, and then she starts saying how all the students try to scrub this and scrub that. And the students are emailing me going, we have no idea, you know, if something's Google cached, how you can get rid of it with students. You know? And so, again, they're getting more sets of death threats. And, I mean, you know, I couldn't let that go.
Right.
And I don't like sort of blog wars, if you want to call it, but this is just, you know, this is despicable, and that's what she does, and it's sad. Her whole shtick on the whole immigration debate is sad enough, and now she's got to attack college.
What does she gain from this? I mean, she's just she must be being paid off. She's just a relentless right-wing bitch hoe, and who is, I don't know what the hell she's getting out of this, and I think that I don't want to condone this. I don't want to condone death threats, but for my Wiccans and witches and all the people that Haruskapate and Scry out there, I would like them to at least throw some bad mojo the way of Michelle Milken, either in an email or otherwise.
Well, you know, people are, I see it, you know, I tell people always, look, you know, if you're going to email somebody, be respectful, you know, don't lower yourself to their standards. And they're the first one. She's the first one to go on TV and cry about the nasty emails she gets. And
she cries?
I mean, she makes, her book is half about emails. It's ridiculous.
All right, so before we run out of time, John Amato, let's talk about this Joe Klein. He's another guy, pays a lot of lip service to being on the correct side of things, yet then he takes a shot at the Democrats last week, saying that they're always, what was his quote, that we're ruining the country somehow, that we hate America, that's
well,
it.
Yeah, exactly.
And
first
then,
he said the liberals, like the angry liberal left that's anti-American, and then people called him on. He said, no, I didn't mean liberals, I mean this angry left. It's like you're just repeating, you know, talking points from the Republicans. It's ridiculous. And he got immediately slapped down, and you figure he'd learn his lesson. But he's a typical, you know, snaky, centrist liberal
That's
pundit
what he is.
Who repeats
right.
And just attacks his own. And like just the other day I just posted, he's on This Week, and he says that tactical nukes should be kept on the table when we talk to Iran. Now, what kind of nut says that?
Yeah, and it's certainly not a progressive. It's like these centrists or whatever you want to call them.
What is a centrist?
A Republican.
really?
That's what a centrist is. There is no center. If you stand for progressive values, you stand for progressive values.
I mean, it's sort of like some sort of journalist term that really, you're trying to get a job at the Washington Post or the New York Times or maybe the New Republic or something.
He seems to be doing all right for himself. It's just he's a provocateur. He likes to do this.
You know, and what he does is he just, you know, he should just start writing for the Weekly Standard and the National Review and just forget about it.
Now, what else you got on the site? The Dixie Chicks. What's going on there?
Well, they have, you know, obviously their new albums now, you know, for sale. You can listen to their song for free. There's a video out. And it's really cool because the whole meme of the right-wing attack machine was like, you know, once they took them off the radio, they destroyed their career. Meanwhile, you know, they made $110 million touring, so it hardly hurt their careers, and it was really Clear Channel that's the one that pulled the plug when they came out, you know, with their anti-Bush sentiments. And it wasn't the radio station; it was Clear Channel. And
you're going to be, as you say that, you're going to be coming out of a Clear Channel outlet.
Right. Well, they know what they did, and the bottom
yeah,
line is,
right.
It's not going. You know, they're great artists. The song is a really good song. And you can't stop it, you know. And unfortunately, you know, having them own 80% of the radio stations, they have power over artists. But you know what? They didn't recant. They made a lot of money. They had a lot of kids in between.
They barely even know our show's on, so we're cool.
I hear. And now they're back, and I'm just supporting them, you know, all the way.
I'll tell you, honestly, thank God for people who have made enough money to where they can finally speak their mind.
You know, you've got to really give them a lot of credit, because when obviously the whole nation was afraid to say anything about President Bush or anything, they came out and said that he's an embarrassment, and that's a gut.
And they come from the other side of the, you know, from that part of the country where people don't say stuff like that. Hey, John, I certainly appreciate you coming on. We'll do it again next week.
My pleasure, my friend. Talk to you later.
All right, John Amato.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, here, listen to that. Listen to that, Jim.
That's an anthem right there, fella.
I'm not taking anything away from that. You kidding? I'm welling up a little inside. I want to put on my Beatles boots and maybe one of those matching suits. I think maybe hundreds and hundreds of us dressed like that can make a difference.
You mock love and my freedoms.
Oh, you're a sad, sad man. We'll be back with the Short Order News.
Coming up next, Mark Maron's Short Order News. Remember, do not attempt these jokes at home.
Sarcasm! Oh, does anybody remember laughter? Mark Maron! Ah!
7 minutes later.
Ah! Now time for the 20-minute drum solo!
All right. You said your piece. I still, even now, no matter how much I know that song, I enjoy hearing it. You know, just like
it's a good riff. It's a good riff.
Okay.
Too bad they didn't write it.
All right. Ding, 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 ding. They amplified it. Okay? They amplified it, my friend. Neil Young's new record I'm very excited about. It's called Living with War. Apparently he put together, I think probably the member of Crazy Horse, if I'm not mistaken, and a 100-voice choir. This is the first true anti-war protest. The war protest record has been down for the count, except for occasionally a new band will do one song and see if they can get some traction with it. But I think Neil Young, being the wizened old pro, a timeless artist.
He's great.
It's timeless. I mean, you can listen to Neil Young from any period.
Yeah.
He's tried to change a lot, but right, even at the root, even just with Crazy Horse, even bottom line, Neil Young, somehow or another, his melodies and who he is defies the constraints of time. But the idea that he's using a 100-voice choir, I find thrilling, because nothing says democracy and unity in music like that many people singing together. I'm very excited about it. Am I being kind of sappy right now?
No, not at all.
Okay. I'm excited about it. We got some more emails that I guess we'll get to tomorrow, and perhaps we'll, because there's people still writing in about...
They're concerned.
You and I will have to get a counselor in here. I really think it's going to come to that, because we just got something going good here, and I would hate for our stupid egos to get in the way with that. So I'm starting to look into counseling.
Okay, is there American to pay for it? Who's going to pay for that?
Bill Kolar, he'll just have me pay for it. You know, we'll just put it on the bill with the $9 million I spent on equipment in my garage.
Yeah, we can use Danny Goldberg's therapist.
Maybe use Danny Goldberg's credit card. I don't want to use Danny Goldberg's therapist, because that seemed to whatever he's doing.
He's doing wrong.
But I think he's apparently he's going to get back into music management now, from what I understand.
Good idea. Destroy music now.
What do you mean now?
Again.
Hey, huh? What do you mean now? Let's call Cobain and see how was handled by Goldberg. Anyways, I've really done it now.
I got a tip for you. Go into the garage with a gun.
It wasn't the garage. It was the upstairs room.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't it? Mm-mm. Was it an upstairs room?
Well, that's the only thing you didn't pay attention to.
A lot happened in the world today, and we want to make sure you're up to speed and informed. So here's tonight's edition of the Mark Maron Show's Short Order News. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration says alcoholism can now be treated by injection. According to the FDA, 2.2 million Americans are currently seeking treatment for alcoholism, usually in the form of, quote, getting more beer, end quote. Cheerleaders in Australia have been banned from bearing midriffs by officials of the sport who fear displays of skin may encourage eating disorders. Let's hope the cheerleaders find a sensible way to protest this puritanical move, like not wearing panties. Come on, how about that? I don't know what just happened. I just turned into Tom Likas. Hey, signaling a big change in the White House, Bush's new chief of staff told top presidential aides that if they were thinking of leaving before year's end, they should do so now. After hearing the announcement, a tearful Osama bin Laden sent a blistering email to the White House demanding he at least get Cobra. And that's because he's on the payroll. Yeah?
Right.
Yeah, he's on the payroll?
That's the intimation there. That's right, man.
And that's the short order news for today. The music ended abruptly and in a strange place. Kohler, what do I got to buy another box that costs money to make the music end right? How much do I got to spend on a switch that'll make the show run easier? Hey, get a producer. He's here like 2 days and I'm out 10 grand. Anyways, moving on. So,
it's an expensive box.
Now everyone's going to know, and Air America's going to have us doing shows out of my garage now. Really? You got equipment in your garage? Well, we were hoping that we could. Can Ariana Huffington come down and do a show out of your garage?
Yeah.
Hey, maybe David Bender could come down there on weekends. Is there a cot there? Maybe Bender can live. You could do Politically Direct from your garage. I can't wait till I start getting those calls from the executives.
Make some of your falafel balls.
I'm going to have to make more. My wife ate a lot of them. But weren't they good, though? They came out pretty good.
Yeah, they're really good. I had to bring out the fart fan last night.
Hey,
thanks a lot for that, by the way.
I'm sure that gets a lot of use in your house, veggie man. I'm a tofu and bean boy. Huh? How much what are you guys, afraid of each other's gas? My wife likes to smell my gas.
We're suspect of it.
She likes to smell it. Did your gas ever surprise you? That's the weird thing about being a vegetarian is all of a sudden you're like, oh, boy, what the hell is that? How'd that happen? Is that from me? Did that come out of me? And then you try and trace it to the food you ate, and there's just no way to figure it out. This is, we're changing the country with this show. We're turning it around. How can the right fight fart talk?
What's this got to do with Google?
Huh? Vegetarian fart talk is what's going to win this country back from the right-wing machine. Yeah, who do we got tomorrow? I don't even know. Huh?
There's nothing worse than a beef fart.
Talk to my friend Jack from Montana. Good night, sheeple. I think that's the last show.